W252DR Oshkosh. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Everyone's accounted for, say Las Vegas police, after searching through the fallen snow in an avalanche above a snowboarder resort. That is farther south in Southern California. That big storm continues to drench over a million people in and around Los Angeles, including the Hollywood Hills and Beverly Hills, under a flash flood warning. L.A. Mayor Karen Bass.
If there is an evacuation order, LAPD will perform door-to-door evacuation notifications if needed.
The Senate is set to vote this week on the landmark Republican-Democratic compromise border security bill. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, a Republican, says it won't get anywhere in his chamber. President Biden calls that hypocrisy after Republicans complaining about border issues. The U.N. Security Council discussing last week's U.S.-led airstrikes on Iran-backed militias. The U.S. defending it, saying the militants had been attacking commercial shipping. A down day on Wall Street. This is ABC News. Buckingham Palace has announced that Britain's King Charles has been diagnosed with cancer and has already started treatment. ABC News royal contributor Victoria Murphy in London.
This was not the announcement that we were expecting. We knew that he was being treated for a benign enlarged prostate, and we expected that the next we would hear was when he was ready to resume duties, ready to go back to work. And from everything that they're telling us, that's absolutely what the king was expecting as well.
Buckingham Palace has not revealed what kind of cancer the king has. There's no precedent for the royal family to disclose it. Russia's space agency announces cosmonaut Oleg Kononenko has broken the world record for the most cumulative time spent in space. He's 59. He spent more than 878 days in space, over five stays at the International Space Station, dating back to 2008. By the end of his current mission, Kononenko is expected to be the first person to rack up 1,000 days in space. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded the Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black history story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The average price of gas in Wisconsin has gone up by a little more than a nickel since last week. Gas Buddy's weekly report says the statewide average of a gallon of regular fuel is about $2.78. It was about $2.73 last week. Prices may dip a bit as refineries unload their stocks of winter blends before the cost goes back up again. President Biden has some competition for Wisconsin Democratic primary voters in April. The state Supreme Court Friday ordered Dean Phillips' name to be on the ballot. Phillips says democracy works best when voters have choices.
I believe democracy requires competition. It makes everything better. American voters deserve choices. 70% of American voters don't want Donald Trump or Joe Biden.
Phillips on Upfront on WYSN-TV. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
The Bucks lose in Utah. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks lost to the Jazz 123-108. Doc Rivers says the team found open shots. They just couldn't score against the Jazz.
I thought when they went big early, we rushed. That's why I called the timeout. So guys, just settle down. We're going to get every shot we want. And we did. We just couldn't make any of them. And the more we missed, the bigger they got.
The Bucks take on the Suns in Phoenix tomorrow night. Men's college basketball. Wisconsin loses to Purdue 75-69 before a sold-out audience at the Kohl Center. Greg Gard on coming up short again to the number two ranked Boilermakers.
Competition at its highest level is very rewarding. It can be very painful, as today is, but it's rewarding. And now, you know, we got to get better before we get to mid-March and see them again.
NFL Packers defensive coaching staff has been told they are free to interview with other teams after hiring a new defensive coordinator, Jeff Hafley. So defensive line coach Jerry Montgomery, who's been with the team since 2015, will interview with the New England Patriots. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight with some areas of fog and lows in the upper 20s. A mixture of sunshine and clouds for tomorrow and warmer, high mid-40s. Mostly cloudy and breezy Wednesday, highs upper 40s. A pattern shift coming for the end of the week, rain Thursday into Friday, followed by colder temps. It's 28 degrees right now.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. Your home for Mino and the Mayor in the morning. Weekdays from 6 till 8. Oshkosh Air Support, 1100 AM and 98.3 FM WISS.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome, Monday Night Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. The number 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Johnny, it's Monday. It's Busted Pencils 5 days a week. Anya's back in the studio. We are so happy to see Anya.
I'm happy Anya. To see you guys.
Oh my. Yeah. A little bit of a bumpy road last week. Well, it wasn't anyway. We need them. Sometimes other people think they want them though. Maybe that's what we could put that out there. But we are so happy to have Anya back. Anya, 5 days a week. We are, you know, we did it last week. We're here. A little bit of a bump, as we said, but we are so excited to bring, you know, the roots, the foundation of democracy, public education every day, 5 days a week now for all of you out there, that this is the show where you can say, wait, I can talk about Friday Night Football. I can talk about the prom, and I can make a connection to democracy. Yes, you can all the time. In fact, if you want to do that, 844-967-2789. Johnny Lupinacci, weekend. How are you, my friend?
I mean, I'm good. It's Monday. Here we go. You know, it's February. The groundhog didn't see a shadow, stayed hanging out. And it's like, you know, spring's just around the corner. And
yeah,
so we're back in the saddle, and there's so much going on right now in terms of where we're at in schools and what kinds of conversations folks are having in their community about, you know, about schools and education. And, you know, it's a good time of year because there's a lot of decisions that are made this mm-hmm. time of year that have huge impacts for the upcoming school year. And so,
yeah. Well, and you know, and say our guest tonight and last week, you know what, Carol, it was a crazy week. So we are glad you are back though this week. A little under the weather last week, Carol Burris, executive director of the Network for Public Education. If you've listened to the show, she's been on the show, she's been on the podcast, but we are so happy, Carol, because we were thinking, you know, Busted Pencils 5 days a week now, Network for Public Education. There's a partnership here in the future that we can see Carol Burris and the Network for Public Education as a regular addition to the show in some way, shape, or form. Carol, you still feeling that?
I'm still feeling it, Tim.
Good.
Gotta get the word out however we can.
We'll get the word out. And so, you know, we've had some conversations too locally because, you know, the show comes out of the Madison, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, all over the state of Wisconsin now, the Wisconsin Public Education Network. and I know you've had some with Heather Dubois Bernain, their founder. We've had some conversations there, and boy, we could see some real great possibilities of the network, the National Network for Public Education, the Wisconsin Public Education Network. Boy, what a great powerhouse, and we could really bring some incredibly strong information. As we said, you know, the show is about public education, but mostly it's about democracy. Because you say there is no democracy without public education in this country. Carol, though, in case anybody is just, you know, the first night they're tuning in on a Monday going, I usually listen on Tuesday. I didn't even know Busted Pencils was on Monday. We have some, you know, people out there who are listening saying Network for Public Education. Carol, what? Tell us about the network. Give us some background story. What are you doing? Where'd you come from? Where are you going?
Well, the Network for Public Education started about 10 years ago, a little bit more than 10 years ago now. And it was founded by Diane Ravitch, education historian, who had been a conservative, who was right in there with charter schools and vouchers and testing. And then she just started looking at the data, she started looking at the numbers, and she said, this stuff isn't working. And so she went to, you know, the Fordham Foundation and all the other people that she was working with. And she told them that, and their attitude was like, well, this is what we do. We don't care. Mm. And so Diane just bucked the tide. She started speaking. She started writing. She wrote a fabulous book, best-selling book, Death and Life of the Great American School System, that just rocked the world and rocked teachers. And shortly after that, she founded the network with Anthony Cody, a teacher from Oakland, California. And it's been going ever since. And I was a high school principal in New York. I was like thoroughly disgusted with the idea of evaluating teachers by test scores and the Common Core and charter schools and all the other nonsense. And so I wound up retiring at 62. And I just had to get, I told the teachers that, so I can't do this anymore. I can't do this to you. I can't do this to kids. And when I retired, Diane said, well, how about being the executive director? That's just a little job.
Yeah, how about not retiring?
Yeah. And, you know, I've been working really hard ever since. It's not as stressful as being a high school principal. Nothing's as stressful as that. But we're at a really difficult point in this country. And after Betsy DeVos was appointed Secretary of Education, our organization really took off. We had a mailing list of about 70,000. 2 months after Betsy, it was 350,000.
Wow.
And we've maintained those numbers and keep on adding on. And while some of the issues that were really on people's minds at that time have kind of slipped away, where our big focus now is the one piece of Race to the Top that never went away. And that is charter schools and now being joined by vouchers and the privatization of public education that has been hijacked by the right. And it has now become a force to destroy public education in this country.
You know, and when you say that, I know this, sometimes, you know, somebody's out there saying, really destroy public education? Aren't they just criticizing it, offering different visions? And it's the answer is no. And I want to just go backwards in time, though, Carol. When you say, 10 years ago, the network came to being, you know, 2 or 3 years before that, we were moving in the opt-out movement to push against this, to save our schools march happened in Washington, D.C. You know, the network came out of this, and I've had some conversations with Diane, another great guest on our show too, Matt Damon's mom, Dr. Nancy Carlson Page. You know, we've been reflecting on this saying, you know, 10 years ago, were we naive to think that doing the active and the action and the activist work was going to make a difference? Because as you pointed out, it's worse now than it's ever been. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I would. I mean, it definitely is. And it's the money. I think a real turning point was when the Koch brothers got into the game. They had never meddled in public education. They never, it was never on their radar. And I'd say probably it was about 7-8 years back, I remember reading how all of a sudden they were convinced that public education was this issue. And their money combined with Betsy DeVos, combined with Alice Walton, combined with, you know, just a Reed Hastings, just a host of billionaires, some who were sort of neoliberal quasi-Democrats, and others that are just hardline right-wingers. Mm-hmm. And libertarians, they've taken over. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, it all goes back. We're having a report come out pretty soon on grading the states. And we do sort of a retrospective in it, like where did this movement come from? And, you know, it came from segregation, right? That idea of school choice after Brown v. Board. But at the same time, you had Milton Friedman in the background talking about this, talking about how people should have money, how to just go and shop for a school, right? Mm-hmm. That there should be vouchers. And even we quote a conversation that he had, you know, even to the point where his ultimate goal was to have parents pay for K to 12 education, kind of that back to the future vision from the 1700s,
right?
You know, the way they pay for college, right?
Right.
And he says in this interview, he goes, and you know, and then there'll be something for the indigent, right? Mm. We know what that's going to be. It's going to be an online school, a crap online school.
Yeah. Right? All of that. I mean, you say the layout and going back to saying, you know, yes, this is an attack on democracy. People are like, oh, public. So it's like, yeah, but recognize what we're talking about here. This attack now, you know, even way beyond, you know, we've traced it, as you said, Carol, segregation. You know, there are different marking points to say, when did the war on public education start? You know, 1983, a nation at risk, no child left behind, race to the top, all, you know, one movement or another, though, really forcing and focusing and really trying to eliminate. And to put this out there, eliminate public schools. And as you're pointing out now, Carol, you know, the voucher movement, the privatization, the charter movement, those are some of the biggest issues now that keep really coming up. And so when you're out, you know, listening, this is where we want to bring the show tonight, really, particularly with Carol. And boy, people are like, how come you're not letting Johnny talk tonight, Tim? I will, everybody. Relax. Come on. We'll let him jump in there. But it's to recognize these things that we hear so much about. And we say, my neighbor hears about vouchers, my neighbor hears about charters, but they continue to maybe not have the opportunity to say, but what's wrong with them? And I, you know, and so that's really what we're talking about here, to say, well, first of all, let's start with this point. What's wrong with them is that they're taking money and stripping away the foundation of democracy, which is our public schools, and recognizing that. I was actually reading some old stuff that I had written 12, 13 years ago, blogging, and was thinking about this because I remember trying to make the case against, it was at the time, it was voucher money. And I remember arguing with a lot of people who were saying, well, but Tim, I am so tired of paying tax dollars for your kids to go to school. And I'm finally it rang, you know, we'll put this up there as we're coming up on, you know, we get ready and I want to come back to this. But Carol, this is not a way to save taxpayers' money when you get vouchers and charters, because the money is still going to go out there. There's no discounted rate because vouchers happen. If you're paying taxes, you're paying taxes. Vouchers, more when we get back.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, the Fox Valley's home of Mino and the Mayor.
Valentine's Day is here. This year, give the ultimate gift. Name a star after your sweetheart. This is Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. For 45 years, we've named millions of stars for celebrities, dignitaries, and individuals worldwide. for $59 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, you can give the most memorable gift. The star you name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Visit starregistry.com or call 800-282-3333.
This message is for Shauna, my mom, who just finished her high school diploma. I wanted to say I'm so proud of you for finishing school. You told me it's never too late to achieve your dreams. I hope to make you as proud as you have made me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, the Fox Valley's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
It's selling something no one can be. If every page was torn from the magazine.
Oh, not that kind of a magazine. Busted Pencils. Fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, or as we've introduced to blue collar scholars coming at this. Carol Burris, executive director for the Network for Public Education, our guest tonight. We did a 10-year remember when the network was formed, and here we are 10 years later, fighting more fiercely than ever. Before we came back into this, Carol, I had said, I remember 12 years ago trying to make the point to some of the people that were saying, Tim, I just don't want to pay, like, my taxes are being used to pay for your kids to go to school, and I don't think that should happen. That's why I'm in favor of vouchers. And I looked at them and I said, well, what do you think that if we get vouchers, and I was in Pennsylvania at the time, if we get vouchers in Pennsylvania, you don't pay taxes anymore? And they looked at me and went, well, yeah, that's why we think it's a good idea. And I went, there's nothing about vouchers and charters and public money that reduces your tax burden. In fact, you continuing to pay taxes is the reality that says you just don't get to say where your taxes go anymore. And you get that ability to move in there. I do want to jump though, Carol, we're going to do into this right away because caller Jack from Merrimack. Jack, welcome to Busted Pencils, and you are talking with the Network for Public Education's Carol Burris. Jack, what's happening? Jack. Uh-oh.
We should be able to hear him.
I do not hear Jack.
We'll see if we can get it figured out, and we'll come back to Jack.
Yeah, we'll see. Got a check from Jim in Appleton. 30 years ago, when one of my children was in a private religious school before vouchers, all the parochial administrators I talked to were opposed to vouchers because they were afraid that if they took public money, they'd be forced to meet public requirements. There's so much in that statement from that, from Jim from Appleton. Carol, though, let's make vouchers, charter schools, how are they related?
Well, charter schools are different than vouchers in that charter schools are, at least on the books, public schools. However, there are public schools that do not have to follow, by and large, the same rules as your neighborhood public school, and they're run by a private board, but they cannot discriminate, for example, based on religion. Vouchers, on the other hand, that's money that are going to private schools, and they can discriminate any way they want to. They can discriminate on religion, they can discriminate by LGBT status, they can discriminate based on test scores. And the thing is, what you were talking about before, when you said about taxpayers, the burden. Here's something that's really remarkable that I just came across. I did this retrospective with NCES data, and I said, well, what proportion of kids were in private schools back in 1999 as compared to now, right? Mm-hmm. Because you have all of these voucher programs that have sprung up. So you would think, because the only way you can possibly save money with vouchers is if kids leave public schools and go to private schools and the voucher is less, right? Mm-hmm. That's the only way taxpayers can save money. Otherwise, everything else is you're adding a burden. Well, guess what I found? In 1999, over 11% of the kids in this nation were in private schools. In 2021, the number dropped. The number dropped to 9.something%, almost 10%. And I looked at Wisconsin, and I did, because Wisconsin, as you know, had the oldest voucher program going, right? In Milwaukee. Yep. Your numbers have barely budged. That means all of the money that you have spent is going into the pockets of people who would have sent their kid to private school anyway. Now, maybe they would have gotten a subsidy from the church. Maybe they would have gotten a private scholarship. But the bottom line is, you don't have more kids going to private school. So that means you've taken whatever the tax burden was, and now you've added another layer on top.
Yeah, so there's no tax break. Hey, we're going to try. Jack, you're back. Jack is back. Jack, what's happening?
Yeah, the statistics I've read basically said that somewhere over 50% of the students who are now in private schools would have actually were in private schools previous to voucher or school choice programs, whatever you want to call them. And so basically what we have here is a system that is giving public funds as welfare to those people who have already, they've already got enough money to put their kid in private school anyway. Now, you know my background. I mean, I've taught in all kinds of schools. I taught for over 40 years before I retired. And I found out that basically school choice is exactly that. The school gets to choose. They can choose, as was just pointed out, they can choose whom they want based on test scores, attendance, other whatever preferences they particularly want. And there is essentially no regulation on that. Public schools, on the other hand, as you know, have to take everyone, and they have to teach everyone and do a decent job. And it's basically, first of all, giving welfare to people that probably don't need it because their student was in private school anyway. And secondly, it's robbing Peter to pay Paul. A perfect example of this is what just happened in the last so-called budget of Wisconsin. $3,000 per student was given to private school voucher programs, and the public schools were allowed to add $312, I think it was, per student for their fundraising. But here's the catch. The $3,000 came out of our Wisconsin state budget surplus that we had of some $7 billion. The $312, oh, you want that for your schools? Fine. Vote yourself an increase in your property taxes, because that's the only thing that was allowed. That's
Jack, you are throwing so much there. I'm watching Carol, because we get to see Carol and see Johnny. Carol, lots of head nodding there to Jack's comments there. You know, Jack and Carol, I think you'll back me up. It's about, the last I heard in Wisconsin, was 75% of kids receiving vouchers were already in private schools. That was the last number I had from Ruth Conniff at the Wisconsin Examiner. Carol?
Yeah, that sounds about right. But, you know, even with that other 25%, that's not necessarily a kid transferring in. That's kids, for example, starting high school in a private school who would have started high school in a private school anyway. Mm-hmm. Or kindergartners going in. You know, we haven't, that's what shocked me when I looked at the numbers this week. The needle hasn't budged, right? You would expect that if this money is actually pulling kids out of public schools, and this is the proportion of kids, the numbers would go up. They're not going up. It's wealth.
For the wealthy. Hold on. Make sure you come back, though, because we are going to get at, though, the charter schools in the right wing turn. Busted Pencils, Carol Burris, more when we get back. I hope you choke on every pill.
Oshkosh Air Support, WISS.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Everyone's accounted for, say Las Vegas police, after searching through the fallen snow in an avalanche above a snowboarder resort. That is farther south in Southern California. That big storm continues to drench over a million people in and around Los Angeles, including the Hollywood Hills and Beverly Hills, under a flash flood warning. L.A. Mayor Karen Bass.
If there is an evacuation order, LAPD will perform door-to-door evacuation notifications if needed.
The Senate is set to vote this week on the landmark Republican-Democratic compromise border security bill. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, a Republican, says it won't get anywhere in his chamber. President Biden calls that hypocrisy after Republicans complaining about border issues. The U.N. Security Council discussing last week's U.S.-led airstrikes on Iran-backed militias. The U.S. defending it, saying the militants have been attacking commercial shipping. A down day on Wall Street. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Gray wolves will stay under federal endangered species protections. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says it's going to focus on a national wolf strategy. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources says that means the state's wolf management plan will stay the same. It bans wolf hunting until the population in Wisconsin is well over 1,000. February is Black History Month. Black leaders in Wisconsin say the fight for equality is as relevant as ever.
All these years later, in 2024, that we've got people who are trying to undermine efforts around diversity, equity, and inclusion to lift people up who've had challenges trying to live out that simple American dream.
Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson on Civic Media's Earl Ingram Show. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
The Todd Allbutt Show.
The immigration challenge in this country, as Jorge Ramos, the great author, likes to say, you can build as many and high walls and deep walls as you possibly want. But until you start addressing the problem within countries, people will keep coming. For all of our faults, people still look at America as that shining city on a hill and want to come here, and I believe that makes us stronger.
The Todd Allbutt Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight with some areas of fog and lows in the upper 20s. A mixture of sunshine and clouds for tomorrow and warmer, high mid-40s. Mostly cloudy and breezy Wednesday, highs upper 40s. A pattern shift coming for the end of the week, rain Thursday into Friday, followed by colder temps. It's 28 degrees right now.
What's on your to-do list? Check your mail? Get groceries? How about getting your annual vaccines? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. Because we've got you. With local vaccine events and access to transportation, protecting yourself and your loved ones is not a chore anymore.
You've got this.
A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging. Funded by the U.S. Administration for Community Living through a grant to U.S. Aging. Learn more at yougotthis.usaging.org.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for the Todd Allbutt Show.
Pizza's here.
Oh, great. I'd love some, but I'm worried about my stomach issues.
If you're worried about having diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools, it may not just be stomach issues. It could be a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on IdentifyEPI.com and talk to your doctor. That's IdentifyEPI.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Your home for the Devil's Advocates, weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. Oshkosh Air Support, 1100 AM and 98.3 FM WISS. Okay.
Welcome back. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Oh, always coming here for the music, too. Of course, the education talk. Educated educators talking education. 844-967-2789. Jack was on the phone last. We were, you know, really happy to hear from Jack. Carol, though, making the move, though, the charters, I think we got this here. But, you know, the report here that, you know, we put out there, I'm just going to read from A Sharp Turn Right, A New Breed of Charter Schools Delivers the Conservative Agenda. This is, quote, American taxpayers across the country are funding the recent explosion of growth in far-right Christian nationalist charter schools, including those affiliated with Hillsdale College. And this is according to the new report, A Sharp Turn Right, A New Breed of Charter Schools Delivering the Conservative Agenda. Carol, why is this, you know, like, explain the distress level that people who might not know about this, why do we care that charter schools are moving right?
Well, you know, it's taking your tax dollars and it's using them to isolate kids in these schools where they are not going to encounter other kids who think differently than they, right? And that's really worrisome. They're using these charter schools as breeding grounds of white Christian nationalism. Hillsdale College is, I think probably most of your listeners are familiar with it. It's extraordinarily right-wing. It prides itself on taking no money from the federal government, though its charter schools do. Mm-hmm. They don't have a problem with that. They helped create Donald Trump's 1776 curriculum. They're very close with Ron DeSantis. The president of Hillsdale was the guy who said in Tennessee the teachers come from the dumbest parts of the dumbest colleges in America, right? Mm-hmm. That anybody can teach. That's another one of his quotes. So what happened was they decided to start these charter schools through something called the Barney Charter School Initiative. And it's, you know, it's not that purple dinosaur Barney that they're talking about, that lovable little guy. This is billionaire Barney, Stephen Barney, mm-hmm. another right winger. And what they do is say there's a community in Wisconsin that's very conservative. In fact, I know you have at least one Hillsdale charter school in Wisconsin. And they get together and they get in touch with Hillsdale. Hillsdale gives them the curriculum, trains the teachers, you know, helps them get going. And then they agree to teach, you know, kindergartners Latin. And all of the other stuff that they do, right-wing history, social studies curriculum. And these schools are spreading. Mm. There was one recently, one that's opening up in South Carolina, board members were all Moms for Liberty. Mm. They recently held a forum, the Moms for Liberty. They brought this principal of the new Hillsdale Charter, as well as an organization called Gays Against Groomers, to come and speak, which is a hate group.
Yeah.
And these are not gays against dog groomers, right? I mean, this is like, this is this crazy right-wing group whose acronym is GAG. Mm. They actually use that. And these are the people that are going to be educating kids. There's one in Ohio we've been following in the report, has a cross on the top of the building. They have it in an old Catholic school, pictures of the Madonna on the walls, a crucifix up in the gym. Yeah. You know, it does everything it can on its website to make it look like it's a free private school. Doesn't even say it's a charter school. Now you say, well, all right, there are private schools that do that. This is completely paid for by taxpayers.
Right.
And to make matters worse, and I wrote about this in the Washington Post, the federal government gave it a $2 million grant to expand federal charter schools program. $2 million. And you read the application and they talk about how they want to help underserved children in the Cincinnati area. Well, unless you consider white nationalist kids to be underserved, that is not who they're helping. The kids in the school, we looked at the demographics. It's 2% Black in Cincinnati that has a school population that is over 60% Black in the public schools. It's 12% for your reduced price lunch. Cincinnati, it's 80%. It is a segregation academy. It is a place, you know, for parents to send their kids who don't want their kids with those kids. And these kinds of charter schools are springing up all over the country.
Wow. Lots and lots there. L.A. Tom is on the line. L.A. Tom, what's happening, my friend?
Hey, guys. First off, happy Monday.
Thank you.
First, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. I'll tell you what we need to do. We need to really start making a push for good government, and good government in terms of what it is that so we can say that our schools are actually good government knowledge centers. They basically have destroyed the word public schools. They basically have destroyed. The one thing Republicans do very, very well is messaging, and we all know that. But they choice school. They always come up with the word, just like the right to work. No, it's the right to work for less. The Blue Skies initiatives, and you end up with more pollution than ever. But we need to do something where we are taking something that we the people pay for as a collective, and that's government. And we need to start, instead of hiding behind the word government as a bad thing, we should be saying government is a good thing, and it's we the people. And if you're going to sit there and talk bad about government, whether you're on the Democratic side or the Republican side, then you know what? Get the hell out of government. You don't belong there.
L.A. Tom, he's just bringing it. Johnny, I see Johnny like, oh, man, L.A. Tom's hitting it hard.
Well, and I thanks, Tom, for the call. Always appreciate it. And Carol, thanks for the time tonight as well. This is an important conversation that has so many complexities to it. But Tom's call brings us back to that important aspect that education ought to be and arguably is vital to a healthy, strong government of any type. Right. And so if that type is democracy, then that's committed to a diversity of ideas. It's not even necessarily bipartisan. That's not liberal or conservative. That's all that's committed to a diversity, a complex mess of ideas based on what? Well, based on hopefully scientific consensus on some things like here are some important skills in mathematics. Here are some important skills in reading literacies. Here are some traditional kinds of things like reading, writing, language acquisition, these skills, also how we make decisions together, all of these things, right? And so schools play a vital role in that. Well, all the things we've talked about here tonight kind of touched on different aspects of ways in which government was utilized, right, as a mechanism to sort of break up the idea of having a common public school system, right? And it sort of, so we really back up and we mentioned all these policies, nations at risks, and talked about charters and privates and things. And before there were even public schools, there was essentially public education and private education. It goes back before we even call them public schools, right? Mm-hmm. And so we can even bring it back into more modern history and say we've had private education and public education coexisting in most places. And this is this utilizing government to really dismantle public education. Did it hurt private education? The verdict's out there. In some places, maybe yes, maybe no. Did it help it? The verdict's out there, maybe yes, maybe no. But there's always been sort of a choice. If you're, and to break it down simple, if you're elite and you've got money, you want to send your kid to a private institution, you have always been able to do that, and you will continue to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And by and large, that's most of the people that attend private schools, aside from scholarships and other kinds of maybe some fundings that exist out there. So when we get into the whole charter thing, for listeners to think about, it's hard to just say it's charter schools versus public schools, because Carol brought this up. Charters are kind of a function of public schools. And really what we're needing to have discussions around, and information, important information like Carol sharing with us tonight, is the discussion around how have we lost kind of the direction and the support for public education in support of a democracy. But this is a public school issue. And charters are every way kind of complicating it and making it really messy within it. But this is an important public issue, because there are different types of charters and there are different things that opened up, right? That opened things up to this possibility of all of a sudden something that says as mainstay as, say, utilities before they were privatized and they were sort of community municipalities or like fire departments and these kinds of things that we rely on our governments so that we can have a good life in our community. Public education was part of that. It was a mainstay. Was it great everywhere? No. But the mechanism and the governance was in place to kind of have that discussion of how do we improve it. But the movement we're talking about, in charter as a part of it, is a specific and intentional effort to remove that from government involvement and to create competition. Sort of to approach education as though it was like McDonald's or Wendy's or Burger King, to say, hey, we want competition in schools. Schools should compete for you parents as customers, right? For your business. And that model maybe arguably could work if we're talking about like where you buy your clothes or where you go get food. I'll argue against that from my own politics, but in general, that's sort of the free market. Right. And whether you're a supporter of free market economics or not, they kind of get that, the competition. Like, hey, if food is bad one place, well, then I should have other options to go get food somewhere else. Hmm. Right. And that model simply does not work for public education in a democracy, because what happened is you created a competition, but there really isn't resources to compete. Hmm. So you're just marketizing children. You're making children in the education the commodity, putting parents often who don't have the financial means to navigate those choices, right? Which is some of the numbers Carol's sharing. Like historically, this has been private schools. This has been like kind of who's going to which schools and what choice means. But what they did is impose a competition that isn't funded across the board. Everybody loses.
Mm.
And it's
Carol. Jump in there, Carol.
Yeah, I mean, he says it perfectly well. I mean, think about this whole idea of competition in at a marketplace. So let's say you're in a real small town in Wisconsin, right? And maybe it's predominantly a fundamentalist Christian town. So you have a marketplace. What's going to happen when people just shop, right? Mm. When they take their public money and they just shop, whatever public money they happen to give to you as a family. But the only school in your town could be a Christian fundamentalist school. So what do you do if you're not a Christian fundamentalist? What do that, right? I love Starbucks, but there's not a Starbucks in every town. The market, that's the way the market functions, right? You know, you got your Dunkin' Donuts, you got your Starbucks. And some places, maybe you get your coffee in the gas station. Mm. And that's all there is. Because that's the way the marketplace works.
It's that part of, you say, it delivers that. Johnny,
well, the part that Carol's saying that's really important is that regardless of where you are, there should be a baseline.
Mm.
So if the coffee is at the gas station, at least you know you have a baseline. Like, there aren't really government regulations on whether or not communities should have coffee. Maybe there should be. I mean, that's maybe sort of the more communist side coming out of me. But historically, in this democracy, coexisting with free market economics is this baseline that let's not mess with schools. There is a baseline. Even if you do live in that rural community, you have access.
This is Oshkosh Air Support, WISS. It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded the Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, the Fox Valley's home of Mino and the Mayor.
Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. The number 844-967-2789. Where has the time gone? Carol Burris, Executive Director, Network for Public Education, talking about, well, first of all, 10 years now the network's been out there advocating for public schools, looking at charters, looking at vouchers. Carol, but, you know, we're going to let you head off to the evening there because this is, you know, we appreciate you taking the time with us. Looking forward to a continued Network for Public Education on Busted Pencils as a regular spot. Carol, though, you had mentioned, though, before you go there, you guys are working on something new, though, too, right now. And wanted to give you an opportunity to just kind of let us know what's happening with the network, when it's coming out, and where we can find more information.
Yeah, well, you can always find us at our website, which is networkforpubliceducation.org. But what we're going to do is we have a 50 state, actually it's 51 because we put DC in it, right? So a report card grading each state on its commitment to public education, its commitment to democratically governed schools. Have to tell you, Wisconsin doesn't do so great. Mm. I don't think it's an F this year, but it's kind of close. Mm. Spoiler. But we look at a variety of factors. We look at privatization. We look at homeschooling and the laws that protect children or don't protect children around homeschooling. We look at financing education. We look at teacher salaries. We look at the laws around curriculum bans and book bans. And we rate each state. It's pretty extensive. We're really excited about that. And we're planning on releasing it during Public School Week, which is the last week in February. I believe it starts February 26th. And
That makes me think then. So end of February, the Network for Public Education, when you guys release that, we're going to have a grand releasing on Busted Pencils. That just makes perfect sense to me, don't you think, Carol?
I think it makes great sense. I'd love to do it. Love to, Carol, do it too. And I'll make sure you get it early so you can read it.
Yeah, give me the opportunity. Well, Carol, thank you so much for busting pencils with us tonight. And we look forward to that report. We will catch you. Thank you, Carol. And be careful out there.
Okay. My pleasure. Tim and
bye-bye.
Johnny. Good night.
Yep. Yeah. Bye-bye. Johnny. So Johnny Lupinacci, come on in there, man. And behind the scenes conversations, lots of information tonight.
I mean, there is a lot of information tonight because the thing is the charter school conversation is complicated. And there are a lot of ways in which we all land on the same page in terms of saying that public education is really important. Carol brought it up. Where you are also matters. These conversations are situational and contextual, right? There is a likely scenario where listeners are hearing this or they're talking or they're in education discussions about where to send their kids, which used to never be a thing. you went to school where your commute, like there was a important vested community connection. You went to school based on where you lived. That wasn't necessarily fair. And Carol brought it up because there's all kinds of talk about segregation, and we know about redlining, and we know about that rural poverty school, impoverished schools were just not funded the same way that middle-class suburban schools or elite schools were. And not even that they were, that we could figure out a way to fund them equally, they were not equitable. In fact, we know lots of those schools function barely on a budget, and that's not right or fair. So the ripe, there were ripe conditions for not only a dismantling of public education as sort of an institution, but an argument for it, because there were a lot of public schools that were really bad. And I know that's like not what we're supposed to say, but we're not here saying public schools as a concept is bad, or that teachers in that public school were bad, or that principals ran the school into the ground. There was a systematic way in which unequal funding over decades decimated public schools, in particularly in urban and rural communities. And this is really linked to how they were funded. Okay, and we can get into all of that, but it was funded primarily on local taxation, which we know was, you know, we know was kind of corrupt in a sense, and millages and in sponsorships and things like that. And so it wasn't equitable or fair. That aside, there are places where our listeners likely have children or are in conversation with neighbors who have children where the public school option might not really be that great or safe. And that's a very real conversation that, Tim, I'm here to have and bring perspective to in this. I think it's important that we land on, hey, public schools are really important, but everywhere there's not an option where it's safe. And that's sad. And that's real. Now, that's why I said conditions were ripe. And remember, I'm a Detroit public school teacher, right? And so, well, not anymore. Now I'm a professor, but I still identify in those roots, right? And I'll tell you, as I saw and experienced a public school system really be put into the place of a condition at which parents became the ultimate victims, actually children and their parents, but adults in the community were all of a sudden going to be saved with charter options, a STEM charter or a health STEM focused charter or a tech school that was a charter. And I'm here to tell you, Tim, I know this is like the equivalent of swearing on this radio station, right? Like I'm not gonna. But this is the equivalent. There are plenty of cases in which these charter schools are much better options than the public schools. And that shouldn't be an argument against public education. That should be a clarion call of like, yo, we've got to do this together better, because when we compete, everybody loses. Right. And so this is why I want to get into the complexities of charters. And tonight, it's like we learned a little bit more about what's happening to better invest legislatively in decisions that support public schools. But for our listeners out there, like, I mean, we are experts on this, Tim. It's part of our job to read on this, to talk about this, and to have been in the trenches of this for 25 some years of our career. But, you know, I'm not an expert as a parent. I'm maybe 13 years into this, right? And I'm hearing, and I get caught in the crossfire of discussion of public, charter, private. And all I want is a good education for my kid. And so there's a lot to break down.
There's a ton there. Yeah, we said, you know, there's a lot there, and it is complex. But I think what you're coming back to, John, here and with the show is that, again, back what we do, public education, and recognizing that if we had some really bad schools, it was a funding issue that got us there to begin with. And so here we are. It's Busted Pencils. It's Fully Leaded Education Talk. Back tomorrow night, teacher shortage special education.
From the home of the largest fly-in in the world, we are Oshkosh Air Support, 1100 AM and 98.3 FM, WISS. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
After my wife died, I felt like I lost everything, including my love of fishing. But one day, my granddaughter called, and I realized I still had a lot to look forward to. I got referred to a psychiatrist who explained depression can happen to anyone. Getting help doesn't make me weak. It makes me stronger. I just wish it made me better at fishing.
Mental health care is working for Diego. See what it can do for you at mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News.